Hello and welcome back to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Billington, and tonight I'm joined by Timo Albers-Daly and Ellie Mae Taylor to review the Japanese Grand Prix. How are you both?
I'm good, thank you. I've been digging holes over the weekend.
Well, are you trying to escape from somewhere, or...?
No. It was to plant trees, but then, obviously, because we used to have rabbits, so I would dig a hole and find a whole network of rabbit holes.
Uncovering a warren of interconnected tunnels, like the Viet Cong. Timo, how are you?
Conflicted, Mr. Billington, because I had a thought on Saturday night.
And that's dangerous.
It is dangerous, as we've established many times, Ellie Mae, and... I sent you a trailer, Jesse, for a film that's coming out later this year. It was a minute long, this trailer, and I got to the end of it and thought, oh no, do I enjoy this more than I've enjoyed the 2025 F1 season so far? I thought, oh no, I might do. And then I thought Sunday should rectify this, and then we had the Japanese Grand Prix, and I went, oh no, I've enjoyed a 1 minute trailer for the new Naked Gun film that nobody asked for, and yet is somehow quite funny in the 1 minute that we've seen of it. And I don't know how I feel about my feelings about that.
Yeah, off the back of the Japanese Grand Prix, there is more promise in that 1 minute teaser trailer than there is for the rest of this season to come. It is a very strange scenario to find ourselves in, but
I will have two other little points just to slip on the end there, which is I saw a stat earlier that across 2024 there were 70 fewer overtakes than a year earlier. Bear in mind that was 2023, the year we had there. And despite there being two extra races in 2024, and so far all three drivers who qualified on pole position in the Grand Prix have gone to win their respective races, plus Hamilton in the sprint. And just to wrap it all up in a little bow, Motorsport pundit and On the Curbs pub chat co-host Jacob Phillips has come up with a doozy of a quote commenting that the Chinese and Japanese Grand Prix were two of the worst I've ever watched. And I don't think he even needed to have a beer in hand to say that with quite a bit of accuracy.
No, the top six for this Grand Prix came home in exactly the order they started.
First time in history.
Yeah, which is quite a dull statistic. I don't think it was even a case of they swapped... They swapped positions through pit stops, so it wasn't an on-track overtake. So yeah, we're left with this thing of start as they quite literally mean to finish. But anyway, we'll dive into that. We don't really have any news off the back of this, and what we do, we're keeping dry as powder for our Bahrain Grand Prix preview, which will be out shortly. So we'll jump into our main element, and we'll kick off as we do with the latest addition to our podcast from our tame driver coach Martin Villari.
Hello, Timo, Ellie Mae, and Jesse Martins here, specialist technical coach and mentor. Yeah, look, the biggest story for me from the Japanese Grand Prix was pretty much the McLaren strategy. How those guys and girls didn't manage to get that thing in clean air for one single lap, seizing defeat from the jaws of victory was absolutely amazing. Surely you pit one of your cars to put pressure on Max Verstappen in the race lead to try to undercut him. And then Max needs to defend that undercut. Meanwhile, you've got the other car staying out. He's off the hook. He's able to show off the beautiful pace that is the McLaren MCL39. That's the biggest story for me. I'm not sure why they did that. It was a strategic blunder. So that's one of the biggest stories. I think obviously the other biggest story was Max Verstappen's brilliance. No, it was as near as makes no difference, a perfect lap in qualifying. And then we're beginning to see a theme this year with the cars having so much downforce, so much turbulence, so much dirty air. Qualifying is approximately equal to a race win at the moment. It's just really important. I think we've seen it in Melbourne, Lando on pole, race win, Oscar, Poland, race win, Verstappen now Poland race win. So I'm starting to see that Saturdays are actually becoming more important than Sundays just due to the turbulence that the cars are generating and how mercurial these Pirellis are, how difficult they are to keep alive in dirty air. So like I said, I think it was an underperformance from McLaren in terms of ability to deliver that lap time in qualifying and ability to show off that lap time in the race. And they're going to need to rectify for that moving forward if they're going to fight for this championship and take it off four-time champion Max Verstappen.
some really sound points, actually. I think Martin has absolutely nailed it. I know that a lot of my points are going to echo what he said as well. So we the thing is, we write our sort of notes down, and then we get Martin's, and then we play Martin's first, so it sounds like we've all copied Martin, which is a bit of a flaw for the way we structure this. But the problem is, with the Japanese Grand Prix, there's so little to say that I think everyone's tripping over their toes trying to find a unique angle. But he's nailed it. Clean air and an offset strategy were key to achieving something. And his point about winning from pole position is going to be an interesting one. And I think Bahrain, I'm crossing my fingers and touching some wood, that this might be the first, Bahrain Grand Prix might be the first time we see someone not win a race from pole this year.
Remind me of Mark Webber when we get to the Bahrain preview, because he's got the optimism that I want to be buying.
I will give you a poke on that when we get to Wednesday evening. Otherwise, we'll dive into our team-by-team analysis, still structured in Constructors' Championship order, which means we kick off with McLaren, who are storming away at this point in time. Norris qualified second, Piastri qualified third, and then, as we've already mentioned, finished second and third, respectively. Timo, we'll kick off with your notes.
Well, as Oscar and various other people point out, the pit stop is the only real talking point, and even that was pretty clear cut, I think, no pun intended. Verstappen clearly came out ahead of Norris. If he'd moved to the left, he'd gone over the white line and been penalised, so naturally he wasn't going to do that. And yeah, he could have been kinder, but when is Max Verstappen kind on track? It just would not be in his nature. He didn't move right, despite what Norris claimed on the radio. You quite clearly see as he's coming out, it's just drives in a straight line, just leaves the pit. And it was an odd move by Norris, I thought, to try and do it there. I would have thought you just tuck in behind him, follow, and just try and keep as close to as possible and do maybe cheeky dive somewhere. And the end of the race for me was very reminiscent of Imola last year, but with Norris again seemingly blunt, nothing from that. It sort of felt like he should have pushed sooner and risked it. Because the worst that would happen would have been P3 as a result, probably, instead of P2. Such was the gap to Leclerc. And talking about P3, Piastri should have been more aggressive sooner too, I think, especially if he wants to gain back the points he lost in Australia. Despite that, another solid race, I suppose, overall for both of them. But I think that Piastri is only going to wait so long for Norris and the team to, I hesitate to say help him, but maybe to be there for him, before he takes matters into his own hands. And I think he'll buy into the whole narrative of better to ask for forgiveness later than permission when it's too late to do anything about it.
Yeah. On the pit exit thing, I think Max absolutely nailed it with his radio line of he drove himself onto the grass. And yeah, quite literally, that's what Norris did. I think someone did the maths. They realised that Norris lost about 2 seconds to Verstappen by doing that, when he would have lost perhaps two tenths of a second if he had just tucked in behind him. So, which is quite a big margin to ask someone to make up when clean and dirty air make so much of a part across the weekend. So you're sort of thinking, oh, I think Norris might have not necessarily thrown away an opportunity, because overtaking did not look easy around that circuit, but he threw away the chance of an opportunity. And I think Suzuka proved itself again to be a driver's circuit, and even more if you had the best car and a sound driver lineup, you still need a driver that can take it to that 110% mark to achieve something that's truly a cut above the rest. McLaren learned that this weekend. It was a solid performance from the team, though I have questions about how much pace Oscar still had, should they have swapped them round. Regardless, for the team, it's a strong result.
It is a strong result, yet you somehow are wanting more, I think, is the key thing there. You know, it really isn't a bad result, but I think it's because it came about with them kind of almost, it almost seems like they were doing nothing, but also what could they do? Because that race just kind of made me feel like I was back in 2020 again, where we had those huge issues with the cars not being able to stay behind each other for a long period of time or get close because of dirty air. These iterations of the new cars, they were meant to provide closer racing. And are we now just going to have...
They've got around it.
Yeah, are we now just going to have a procession of them all following each other around for the other however many race, 21 races we've got left?
I can't answer the second bit because I don't have the answer. I fear that I do actually have the answer, and it's one we don't like. But I think it was Steve Jones or Mark Webber saying in Channel 4 that you've got two drivers there. I think it's Steve Jones, actually, which no offense against Steve Jones, but if he can kind of give you an idea of what would have been a better idea to do with both of your cars in a Grand Prix rather than all of them at McLaren pit, or then something's amiss. You've got two drivers there, in second and third, up against one driver in an inferior car, and you've got a decent gap back to another inferior car behind you. Even if overtaking is tricky, you should maybe be able to risk getting back past Leclerc if you somehow got behind him. Why not at least split the strategy a bit and just try something? Because Max does not have a rear gunner. Leclerc didn't really have a rear gunner because Hamilton was still a bit further behind the Mercedes. And worst case scenario, you lose a few points maybe, but the upside is worth it, surely. I would have thought if you'd let Piastri through a bit sooner, if he couldn't get past Verstappen, you just swap them back again. It's not rocket science. So I was kind of confused as to why they didn't do anything there. It's a little bit like Martin was saying. It just seemed a bit of a head scratcher that you wouldn't at least try it. You know, it's why I was saying about Piastri going, well, how long is he going to just sit there, do his thing before he just gets a bit fed up with him? Go, well, at least let me, if you're not going to let me try, I'll just go and try myself. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But someone's got to try something, especially if it's going to be 21 more processional races like this, as you say.
Yeah, I think just trying something would have been great, considering the gap that McLaren and Max Verstappen had over the chasing field. You could have had a bit of a fumble, lost a lot of time, and still come home on the podium. So it's, I think it's a lot of questions unanswered, and possibly a sign that McLaren are, of how McLaren are going to play their season, which is to say, very carefully with as minimal risk as possible. And while that is going with a car as good as it is going to earn them another Constructors' Championship. I don't think it's going to earn them a Maybe. Championship. It depends how development from the other teams go as well, but we'll wait and see. We'll get to other championship contenders with our next team, which is Mercedes. And Russell qualified fifth, Antonelli sixth, and they finished, well, fifth and sixth. And Timo, I'm going to let you start with this one, and I'm going to simply say I agree with you.
It's ballsy ahead of time. I mean, I know you've read a little bit of what we've written down briefly on the notes here, but it's a curious day, when we're having far too many agreements, and they please disagree with me just so we have some kind of normalcy, even if you don't really believe it yourself. They might be constructive championship contenders, Mercedes, if we're all not careful. They're just, the Jaws music just intensifies week after week with them at the moment. You have another anonymous race for Russell, but he does exactly what he kind of needs to do. Amusingly, he can't get a podium for three races in a row, which just seems to be the thing that he struggles with the most at the moment, which if that's what he's struggling with at most, that's not too bad. Solid Grand Prix for him. And then Antonelli just casually becomes the youngest driver in F1 history to lead a Grand Prix, although amusingly has now aged out of the possibility of becoming the youngest driver to win a Grand Prix. He's getting on, bless him. But they're not a million miles away from McLaren, and I mean, I don't know what would cause a fumble, and the NF of mechanical nature maybe, or just a crazy race, but if Mercedes can just keep doing what they're doing and avoid any kind of drama whatsoever, then it'd be weird to see them somehow get a constructor's title out of this, but it seems not out of their own possibility. Disagree with me anyway, quickly, before Jesse agrees with me.
I will agree with you mostly. Also, they are actually quite a long way off McLaren. McLaren are on 111 points.
Yeah, but in comparison to everyone else.
Red Bull 61, and then Ferrari 35. Then you get to Williams, somehow in fifth, 19. Haas 15, Aston 10, RB 7, Sauber 6, Alpine still pointless. Feel like
they're playing hard to get. They're coming back, you wait.
Yeah. But I think Mercedes have got the opportunity to go for a constructors title this year, and they've got a good bit of consistency. The problem is they're going up against McLaren's consistency. If McLaren drop the ball, I think Mercedes are primed to pounce, though.
Yeah, I don't think Mercedes at the minute are in contention for the title, but they are definitely getting on with the season with sort of a quiet confidence. There's no real thrills from either of them yet, but both of them are impressing me with how they've been driving this season this far.
Russell feels like he's turned up the wick, and Antonelli has arrived properly primed and ready to do it. And I think, again, Antonelli's side of the things stems from the effort Mercedes put in. And we've mentioned that God knows how many times now, but mostly in reference to other drivers and teams. So it's just interesting. They feel like they're firing on all cylinders. They've built themselves back up and they're getting ready just as regulations change. But Mercedes have come into previous change of regulations quite strong. So we'll see what they're able to do.
Antonelli also is the first rookie since Lewis Hamilton to score points in his first three Grand Prix, which is just kind of a nice mirroring.
Yeah, it is. It's a nice parallel to see. So we'll see how that progresses. Meanwhile, third in the constructors is Red Bull. Max Verstappen qualified first and won. And Yuki Tsunoda qualified 14th, does, however, advance up the grid to finish 12th. Timo.
Brilliant pole by Max Verstappen. I mean, it seems so weird to compliment him and be happy that he's doing well when all we've wanted for so long is for that not to be the case, because it'd be meaning something was interesting was happening. But this is weirdly the one time where something interesting happening is him being him. And for him to get pole without any purple sectors either was quite amusing and a bit of a kick in the teeth from McLaren in some respects, because you go, you've got the best car, and according to Norris, the best driver lineup, and the Max goes, I don't even need to be the quickest, and I beat both of you. You go. Dominated during the race, as we said, and it just never really looked in doubt. The calmness with which he was just on the radio the whole time, GP just also didn't seem too fazed by anything. Not that he ever sounds too fazed anyway, but it seemed even more blasé than usual. And as for Tsunoda, not a bad debut weekend by any stretch. Not a great one either, as much as he was hoping for. Finished in the same place that Lawson finished in China, which was a little bit amusing because everyone just goes, well, what did we achieve here? And it's going to be an interesting one to try and figure out what yardstick to use to measure him by and how long we give him, considering, again, and which approach we use to measure him by with all of the other yardsticks, because everything's just been so messed around, as we thought about before. Usually he qualifies well and is then hampered in the Grand Prix, but he didn't really succeed in either here, and I guess that just means that the car isn't actually that easy to drive from the get-go after all. And funny that, it's not like we could have all pointed that out. And it just leaves everyone a little bit, I don't know, not with egg on their face, but they've got something and they're like, I'm not really sure what to do with most of this, and you kind of just want to wait a few races, but then you feel if you wait more than two Grand Prix, you're somehow dissing Lawson because he only got two Grand Prix. And you go, well, if that's all he can do in that time, if Yuki doesn't do better in that time, by the end of Jeddah, say, with the vast amount of experience in F1 that he's had in comparison, then you're just all kind of scratching your heads, if you like, and going, what do we say? And again, if this was any other time, we'd be like, it's not bad, considering. But because they've handled it in the way they've handled it, we're all just going, I don't know.
Yeah, it feels tricky to try and judge Tsunoda based off of just 50% of the running time that he's had in the opportunity that Lawson had. So it feels hard to judge him at such a short yardstick. I think.
But what do you use and what do you leave out?
I know this weekend there was a lot of word about the fact that Tsunoda was running a higher downforce setup that should have given him a different advantage, or certainly in qualifying didn't give him the advantage. It gave him a slightly more stable platform to work off to get used to the car in his first Grand Prix weekend. Fair enough. The problem is that then hampered him in qualifying because he didn't have the outright pace needed to match the rest of the field. Okay. And then it turned out it just wasn't a Grand Prix you could overtake at. So he was sort of stuck there for the large part. So you just sort of got to wipe it out as an opportunity for Tsunoda and just sort of go, it's fine, we'll get him on the next one. When it comes to Verstappen, though, other side of the garage, I will agree a bit with Timo here, because certainly if we're going to say Grand Prix are now won on Saturdays, this for me was one of Verstappen's best. You watch that qualifying lap back and it's not purple sectors in any of them, but it's just this clean, ruthless consistency that we've come to know from Max Verstappen when he's operating at his 110%, and it was sublime. And I mean, Fernando Alonso remarked upon it post-qualifying. He sort of saw Verstappen's time, saw what he'd done, and just sort of goes, That's what a top-class driver is able to do. And this is what I'm sort of alluded to in the McLaren point, is you can have the car that's 100% there and you can have a sound driver lineup, but you're always going to be toppled by a car that's a bit ropey but has a driver that's always operating at 110% when they're on track. Max is that one that is always operating at 110, even against a slightly shonky car, and that's where the difference is.
I think we need to give Yuki more time to embed himself in the team and also get used to the car. I think it was Christian Horner who said that they turned the car upside down to try and find the right setup for Verstappen's car. And I think where Verstappen's been in the team for years, He and his mechanics know each other well enough to create a setup that works. And with Yuki, they get to build that rapport with his side of the garage to know how to really set up the car for his style and to maximize his performance. But like you guys have said, when Norris put in a woman at 26, I didn't think anyone was matching it. And Max Verstappen did what Max Verstappen did best and presents us with one of his masterclasses. He's 1 point now off of Norris in the championship, and that's not a position I thought he was going to be in, but he has consistently outperformed that car, which really is just a continuation of what he was doing last year.
It goes back to what I was saying about drivers like Hülkenberg in Australia, for example. They can just get in, not have to worry about anything because not they, they in Verstappen's case, he's got nothing left to prove. In Hülkenberg's case, he knows he's in this not great car, so he can just not have any pressure on him as such and just do the best he can. And if he gets points, everyone's happy. And if he doesn't, no one's surprised or disappointed in him because they know he's a good driver. So Verstappen can just get in and go, yep. I'm just going to do what I do. I'm going to have a nice calm time about it, and then has the fun kind of comments in the cool down room later to just kind of aggravate and try to put salt in the wound a little bit extra there. Although you did amuse me just there where you said about Christian Horner's comment about turning the car upside down, and I just assumed that was because Yuki got lost in there somewhere there to try and shake it to find it and get him back out again.
Like
I
moving
do.
a harpic inside a guitar, just shaking it around, going, come on.
I do think that Verstappen has the least pressure on the grid because he has nothing to prove. And
Which is kind of ironic when you think about it. You think if anyone would have the pressure, it'd be him because he's got to keep performing, and yet somehow, no.
I don't. I he well, he just doesn't have to prove himself. I know Red Bull have a past, but they're not going to kick him out, are they? Whilst it's like the people that he's constantly.
Don't give them ideas.
The people that he's currently fighting with, you look at McLaren, you look at either Lando or Oscar, neither of them have won a championship. And it's always going to be in the back of their mind of thinking, this is like my moment to win a championship here. And they've got that pressure behind them. Max doesn't have that. He didn't even think that he had a card in this season to be in title fighting contention. And somehow he is. So I think he's just making the most of it.
And we've come to the conclusion that a lot of the drivers probably listen to this podcast, given the things that we've sort of seen correlate over time. It's probably worth pointing out to Max Verstappen, they can, if they need to, demote him to Formula 2 and simply swap in Lindblad, because Max Verstappen has not competed in Formula 2 and has not won the Formula 2 championship and therefore cannot be ruled out from competing in Formula 2.
Is there a rule yet saying you can't be in both at the same time? Did they have that, or have they
I
got
don't
involved?
know. We
to do it
This would
back.
be a great way to test that out.
We are the unfortunate day after the anniversary of Jim Clark's death, who famously ran in Formula 2 and Formula 1 at the same time and was killed during a Formula 2 race. But there is, if you haven't done Formula 2, I don't see why you can't race in both. I think it's just a scheduling thing. But if Red Bull
Well,
got
he's proved he can do a sim race the night before an Italian Grand Prix and be totally fine, so I don't see why that would be an issue.
Yeah, and equally, if they've got Lindblad there and they are desperate to make some swaps this season, up goes Lindblad, down goes Verstappen, skipping AlphaTauri and right down to who's Lindblad racing with? Is he Campos this season? I can't remember.
Possibly. Insert correct name here. I wasn't expecting to be tested on Lindblad, just to be honest today.
Or we see whether Max Verstappen can win in a racing ball.
Well, we'll be able to win in the current Racing Bull. It's such a flat and neutral platform, but it's not quite to his cape sort of taste, but he's such a quick adapter. So I reckon you chuck Verstappen in a Racing Bull, you're getting a top six finish.
Even with their strategists?
Oh, he's overcoming that. He's doing his
Oh,
own.
I was going to say he's just turning the radio off early, mate. He's not
Yeah.
listening to them.
He's unplugging that from his helmet. Unless they allow him to
You
bring.
know the proper old chunky radios you get in cars. He just yeets one of them out the air for no.
Was
Proper
it
big double din unit with a bit of molded plastic in
the.
Monaco? I can't remember whether it was Monaco or a different race where he just went into the pits by himself and Red Bull were like, we're not expecting you to pit here. And he didn't even know why he had done it either. But maybe he just does that. He just turns up and is like, I want some fresh tyres now. Thanks.
Think it might have
It's in my head.
been done that before, or possibly a Baku because the radios don't work around Baku either.
I was just going to put it in my head canon that he was watching Monty Python the night before and just decided, well, no one expects the Spanish Inquisition, so I'm going to test them out here and see if they do the same.
Nobody expects the surprise pit stop anyway. Speaking of teams that usually don't expect even scheduled pit stops. It's Ferrari. Leclerc qualified fourth. Hamilton qualified eighth, just behind his biggest fan on the grid. Leclerc would then finish fourth and Hamilton would finish seventh, having overtaken Isaac Hadjar. Just another sort of weekend for Ferrari, isn't it, really?
I mean, where are they? We thought they were going to come into this season fighting for a championship, and their performance over these last three races have left me feeling a bit meh. At what point have they been fighting for a podium this season? They haven't.
But the thing that amused me was I saw the title of the article earlier where Fred Rousseau is saying it might be quali championship this year. And before clicking on the article, I thought, oh, I agree with you. I think the way you're going, it's going to feel like you're doing one long practice session for the championship next year when you have a go at it. Then I read the article and understood, oh, he meant if you win qualifying, you win the race. That seems more likely, going off what we were saying earlier about it being pulled a flag for everyone. But it does already feel like what I thought he meant, which was they're just going back and trying to figure out what to do with everything and going, well, maybe we shouldn't have changed the car that much, but now that we have and we're stuck with it, we're going to just treat this as a big qualifying session and do all the testing, and then next year will be our year again.
Or they're testing for a car that's going to be different next year, the regulation.
Don't bring logic into it. That's not what they're there for at the moment.
Maybe Ferrari are thinking of 2026. Maybe that's where they were at. Anyway, for me, it feels like steps in the right direction for them this weekend.
Hopefully, at least they finished the race. They didn't get disqualified. They didn't trip over their shoes. And that's all I wanted from them last week when we did the preview.
Yeah, you know? True. Yeah, I mean, hopefully the triple header will bed them in further. The tweaks to the car post-China haven't removed too much of its drivability, so clearly they understand roughly what they're doing to that car. The problem trying to get a steer on their performance is just how close the midfield have gotten this season, though. Even the slightest slip makes it immediately look like you're struggling when you're swamped by Hadjar, Albon and Behrmann. Like, you can be just a fraction off the pace, and all of a sudden, you've got two rookies and a Williams sort of dogpiling, and you're like, It visually, it doesn't look great. And I think that's one of the key issues they've sort of bumped into is, while the car might be quick enough, the problem is the guys behind them have really closed up. So any slight problem, you start tumbling backwards.
They've just got to get their basics right, you know, because they're a really new team.
Yeah, always give way to the traffic from the right at most circuits, unless the pit lane is the other way around, in which case it's traffic from the left. I don't know. It's just another weekend where you sort of go, this wasn't the worst weekend to be a Ferrari fan, but at the same time, seven-time world champion Lewis Hamilton was out-qualified by Isaac Hadjar.
At least he finished ahead of him.
Yeah, he finished ahead of him at least, but I mean,
I think this whole season so far has just been the meme of Latifi with a stick, poking a stick.
I did think this earlier.
Yeah. We need a Magnussen or a Latifi back to occasionally do something a bit wild and bin it, or have some sort of fantastical accident just to make it a bit more exciting. I think Australia set the bar way too high. China wasn't quite the sort of emotional level.
No, Australia did not set the bar too high. It went, this is a mess, and we're just going to mess with everyone respectively. And then you got two incredibly dull races after that that made it look like it set a high bar, when in fact it was just a mess.
Maybe that's a better critical viewpoint on it, but that's not the point. Anyway, we've still somehow got Williams in P5 in the constructor standings, and importantly for them, they've now outscored everything they did in the last season. This is also the first time since something like 2014-15 that they've scored
points. I will tell you these things. Consecutive races. This is the best start since 2016. The last time they got 3 points scoring Grand Prix back-to-back with 2017 with Felipe Massa in Japan, Singapore and Korea. That's how long ago it was Korea was on the calendar. And yeah, they've Albon's got more points, is on level points with the entire team from last year, and they've collectively got more points already than all of last year. And let's face it, probably the year before and the year before that.
So it's going well for Williams, really. Albon, yeah, pushing to get the most from this team. I think you could tell a little bit of that from his radio message. You could just sense it coming through with that radio message that was broadcast, that he's really pushing for this team to try and develop the car and really take it to its full 10 tenths of potential. Carlos, though, working to learn the car on the softs at the end, he was flying, but by this point, the tyre delta was in his favour and he was on low fuel, so doesn't really prove much, but I think it was a good opportunity for him to really just nail in some fast driving practice in that car. Overall, it's just a solid outing for them. Somehow their outing is considered solid, but Ferrari's is just considered air. But I think that's because we have different baselines. It's
because we expect so much more from Ferrari and Williams have been plumb last for the last few years, and we're just genuinely happy to see it. And Eddie May is going to find a way to congratulate Nigel Mansell for achieving this.
I think he set the bar, and
he's the motivational poster on the side of the wall.
Yes. I mean, I reckon Carlos Sainz could grow a Mansell moustache. I don't know about Albon.
No. I think if Carlos Sainz did that, we'd have to blindfold you for your own safety.
Or we'd have to tie her down and sort of douse her with cold water. Like sort of a late sort of...
Get one of those big fans from the 1800s. Like, no, Ellie May, no, calm.
Like a 1880s treatment for sort of like female dysphoria, just sort of like she is too horny, make her wet and cold.
The equivalent of showing ankle in like the 1800s.
Yeah, so activity akin to that. I'm trying to find, like, of all the champions that they've had, I can't believe that, like, you think the most recent one is going to be Nigel Mansell.
Well, it's what we would prefer to have been the most recent champion from Williams, considering I learned...
Whoa. Sorry, you heard Alain Prost and Damon Hill in that gap. I'll discount Jacques Villeneuve.
I forgot about Prost, but fair enough, Damon Hill. I mean, I was thinking of Jacques Villeneuve because listening to him this weekend made me think there are genuine benefits to deafness. And where is the nearest knife? Can I plunge it into my ears, please?
I don't know. I thought he was an
impressive
on Crofty, but again...
Well, yeah, but the bar is fucking on the floor for that, no?
Yeah, the bar is Crofty. he had useful things to bring. The problem is, the way he delivers it, everything feels like he's talking from the world's highest horse. And
is a load of bollocks.
Some of what he says makes a great deal of sense, and he does have, bear in mind...
How much were you drinking?
A lot of these times it was very early in the morning and I hadn't had coffee. But bear in mind...
I think if we're committing any money for Carlos Sainz-related business, you're going to be in the building next door for other related stuff to do with Jacques Villeneuve.
For thinking positive about Jacques Villeneuve. Anyway, we won't go dive too far down there because we're still going to talk about Haas. Oh, no,
before we get to the Haas, because I want to delay disappointing Henry, Carlos Sainz... Quick thing on this, because I don't know if you two saw nonsense.
His 20 euro poo.
Well, possibly. But the fact that he got fined 20 grand with the 10 grand of that being suspended for being late to the national anthem because he had an upset stomach, was visited by a doctor who then...
A doctor's note. He literally full. I've got
gave him a doctor note, verified it, and then they said mitigating circumstance meant that... the usual fine of 60 grand was reduced, but displaying respect for the national anthem is a high priority and all parties need to consider every eventuality in planning to be in position for the anthem by the required time. And you just think, Kimi Räikkönen, Brazil. I don't remember him getting a fine for that.
That wasn't a national anthem. That was someone's Lifetime Achievement Award presented by Pelé. That was different. Also,
it kind of just shows what you can go to the bathroom for, what you can't. And also, what the hell is a legitimate reason then in actually having a doctor's note and you still get fined 20 grand for it? It seems a bit ridiculous, no?
Well,
and you may vent your frustration.
I think if Jesse's in the room next to me, because whatever, the FIA are in the other room next to me, because what kind
I'm gonna have
of...
a lot of visiting hours at this rate.
It's a strange hospital.
Who thought I was the one doing the visiting and not being cooped up in one of these places? Bloody hell.
What kind of trauma do you have to inflict that ridiculousness on someone? Come on.
We've solved the swearing problem. Now we're going to crack down on the real humdrum drama that's really plaguing Formula One. Doctor's notes.
Doctor's notes and drivers with funny tummies. I mean, I don't get it. Have the FIA solved every other problem with the sport and this is what they now need to focus on?
Well, exactly. And whilst we're criticising people and organisations, Albon, we obviously said that earlier we alluded to his uncharacteristic vocalness on team radio. And apparently, according to him, he's normally like that. We just don't hear it. And I found that quite interesting because it's the second time in as many races that we've had a case of F1 creating more drama than is potentially there. Because we had this with Hamilton in China, and brings up the question again of sport or entertainment, natural or fabricated. It seems a little bit kind of like they may have been doing this for a long time, but we've never been kind of informed, and no one's kind of cottoned onto it in a big way. And in two Grand Prix back to back, because of the dullness probably of them, it's been noted. You go, what are you up to? And why do you feel this necessary? And if you're going to try and create drama, this is the best you've got for it, where it's so easily kind of like, you can tell. It just, yeah, F1, next building over again. Adima, you're going to have a
yeah,
lot
I was
of
going to
friends
say, we're going to need additional rooms,
in
aren't
this.
we?
Yeah, we're going to. I'm going to do a Bernie Ecclestone-style deal, buy somewhere cheap, renovate the whole thing, and I'll get loads of money in because I've had lots of residences at this rate.
Oh, no, this would have never happened under Max Mosley, I'll say that much. Anyway, we'll move from Williams and the world's most expensive poo to Haas. And, well, looking at Ocon's performance, a relatively expensive poo, but also Behrmann points. So, mixed bag.
I mean, besides the mishap in free practice in Australia, I think Behrmann has come into the F1 and sort of hit the ground running, really. This was another great drive for him. I know Ocon did well in China, but I do think he's showing Ocon up a little at the minute. I mean, it hasn't taken away the doubt in my mind that he was a better swap for Magnussen.
Yeah, I think so. There's not much I've said. I want to just kind of, I agree with you 100%. And I just have an apology for Henry, because in reality, I think I have to go back on what I said in the preview for the Japanese Grand Prix. The Red Bull's livery did look better than the Haas's in practice. The Haas's looks better in the photos, but racing around the circuit 180 miles an hour, the Red Bull did look quite nice. And I wish they'd keep it.
Yeah, the Haas one just sort of got lost a bit, although I think Ocon having terrible sort of pink car trauma sort of being rearing its head, and that was why he wasn't on the money this weekend. Sort of a terrible flashbacks to both his Force India days and his Alpine days. But I don't know. Off weekend for him. But Ollie, I agree with Ellie May, absolutely on it. Aced quali and then just carried it through to the race, just sort of didn't put a foot wrong. And I think Haas just dealt with everything as it came this weekend. So it's really just good to see.
You can see how much we're struggling to try and eke this podcast out in places, don't you? There's really not much to say on these things.
We're going to be sub an hour, I reckon. Aston Martin, this is going to be a quick one. Alonso Q12.
I've got two notes.
Q12 finished P11. Stroll Q20 finished P20. I'm very much leaning into the Alonso clone theory, because which one do we have here? Because this is not the gold tier Alonso we've seen in dumb chassis before.
But he has finally finished a race.
This is
that was one of my notes.
This is
with an exclamation mark at the end.
Yeah.
But it is the first race that they finished without points.
It's kind of, you can have one or the other. You can have Stroll on the board, or you can have Alonso finish a race. You cannot have both. Choose wisely. Yes, I just wrote down that Stroll defaulted back to his original state after listening to us on the podcast and realising, oh Christ, yes, I'm terribly sorry. I've been performing. Whatever am I thinking? I shall get back to my usual business. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, he has been performing on TikTok, though. He's been releasing some fresh content there, so great.
The fact that you follow Lance Stroll on TikTok is a mark against you in so many ways.
I follow a lot of things online, Timo. You don't want to know about it.
No, we don't.
Anyway, if that's Aston Martin out of the way, we'll move into Racing Bulls. Hadjar qualified 7th, finished P8th after getting overtaken by Lewis Hamilton, one of the only on-track overtakes this weekend, apart from the overtake that befell his teammate, Liam Lawson, who qualified 13th, finished 17th. Was overtaken, obviously, by quite a few drivers, one of which was Yuki Tsunoda going through the... just coming out of the S's on the opening lap. Just Lawson left the gap there and Tsunoda just whipped one up the inside. But that's not really on Liam. He's got to settle back down, get used to this car, get his feet back under the table and rebuild. It, again, not using the Red Bull metric, two races or one race weekend is not enough to sort of prove anything about this guy. So we don't really have anything to say.
Again, at the risk of putting you logical or implying that you have logic about you, which, yeah, you don't really want to use Red Bull's metric for a lot of things at the moment because they're so batshit in every single way. I think Lawson had a good qualifying considering all of the stuff I said back in the Chinese Grand Prix review. This is a new car. He's not driven it, even though he was in last year's version, da-da-da. Soft tyres at the end, a bit like Sainz, was a bit of a curious decision for me and didn't really do either of them any favours. So hampered it a little bit like that. I mean, on the one hand, you try something. On the other hand, a bit odd. But for Hadjar, really great for him. And I just hope, for his sake, that Red Bull don't mess around with him next, because, my God, leave one of them alone. He seems... Weirdly, again, if you'd said this to us at the start of the season, Jesse, that Hadjar would be kind of the revelation, we'd be going, what on earth? Who's spiked the Kool-Aid? But we're all now kind of quietly protective of him, although I don't know if I can quite say that myself just yet, because I'm not quite ready for that just yet, but maybe off Jeddah.
I mean,
give me a few more races.
I put Hadjar down as most DNFs, and to be fair, he's only had one. I also said
Alonso's beating us on that one, for Christ's sake.
Timo, you and I both said he'd also have the biggest damage bill, but so far he's actually been very clean and also accruing a lot of points, so I don't think we're scoring
Monaco.
I don't think we're scoring there, but yeah, I mean, Hadjar settled really nicely, driving at a really consistent level, which is what we want to see. He's got points on the board at one of his favourite circuits, so he's made up, and yeah,
he's got more points than Yuki.
He's got more points than Yuki, and I do feel for Isaac Hadjar's Nadja.
Which is why I'm worried for him with Red Bull.
Isaac Hadjar's Nadja, though, is a little bit of a painful point from the weekend. I think he got it mostly sorted for the Grand Prix. But yeah, I borrowed a friend's rally car to head to a car show on Sunday morning and somehow also befell the same problem when I clicked in the four-pointer and immediately felt it pinch. I was like, oh! And I was like, but I'm not stopping from like 180 miles an hour into tight turns. I'm only doing sort of 40, 50 on the back roads. But yeah.
This is what I want to say to you, Ellie May. Do you want to adopt his team radio message for life in general? Because I'm considering it of whenever something new that vexes you comes along, go, new problem unlocked.
Yes. Yeah, I saw that one.
I don't really know what to say after that. I mean, after that crash in Australia, Hadjar really has really dusted himself up, come back fighting, you know, to put great performances in back to back, really. And Racing Bulls have finally stopped getting their strategies wrong, preventing their drivers from getting points. And I just think with Lawson, like you've really said, I think it's just a case of him getting his confidence back in the car, which is going to take time. But I think Racing Bulls will give him more support with that.
What did you think of Sauber while we're at it? Because that's not going to take long. We might as well carry over.
Yeah,
they were there.
They were there. Is that all you got? To be fair, I didn't have much more. I just thought it was a good save from Bortoleto during qualifying through 130R because that did look a little bit squirrely for a second. But again, just nice to see that he's still there. He can still do what he needs to do. And again, I think he is a driver where, because there's so much going on elsewhere, or lack of things going on elsewhere, that even with a dull race like Japan, we forget that he's just quietly betting himself in. He's not made any real mistakes at all. Yeah, you had the little scene in Australia, but so did almost everyone. So you kind of get a free pass for that. And I think he just deserves a little bit of attention. I don't think anyone's giving it to him, bless him.
No, you are right there, because I think we've obviously got so many rookies as well that he's kind of overlooked, but he is doing, I think, just as well. It's just there's no airtime for Sauber at all. I don't remember seeing them in the race, really.
No, I think you saw Hülkenberg or Bortoleto get out of the way of Verstappen at some point, and Hülkenberg overtaking someone, possibly Sainz, or Sainz overtaking Hülkenberg, and that was about it. But again, it was a blink and you miss it sort of cameo. Whereas on the other side of it, Alpine did kind of have a blink and you miss it kind of Grand Prix, but there's strangely a lot to talk about if you want to, depending on how far down this rabbit hole we want to go down.
It's just a mess. That's...
It is. I mean, I'll come to you with a
If you do talk about them, where do you start?
Well, that's the thing, right? I feel like not that the Red Bull situation has resolved itself, but they've parked themselves off from it. If this is so popular, we've wrapped up their storyline for a minute. We can come back to it later, and now we've got the drama over here that's continuing and been bubbling on. That's taking center stage because the whole Doohan situation just smells so fishy. It is ridiculous to me because I'm surprised that nobody would have told Doohan, if he in fact believed himself, that it would be a bit too risky to try turn one at Japan with DRS. I can't imagine him not telling someone if it's true. And if it is true, I can't then imagine them not talking him out of it due to the aforementioned high level of danger. And again, it would baffle me then that he would try it without telling anyone and then potentially giving him the okay. And it just all smells like Alpine trying to find an, or Alpine, maybe certain people at Alpine, finding another way to throw him under the bus. And I think that E15, despite all of that, not getting to drive an FP1, essentially not getting to drive an FP2, and then having a not bad Grand Prix is probably better than a lot of people will give him credit for. And I don't mind him crashing in theory because it means he's testing the limits. Reasoning aside, because as I say, fishy. And Verstappen himself said years ago that when he first crashed in Monaco, he felt so much better afterwards because he then knew how close to the limit he could take it. And that will be true if we get to see Doohan in Japan next year in Formula One. I don't think he's going to do that same thing again. This is where future us can play this clip back, and I haven't aged well at all on that one, but that's future me's problem. I also just think that if you needed to put Hirakawa in FP1 because Japan, because home Grand Prix, da da da, why not give him Gasly's car? Gasly's had plenty of experience around Japan. He's not going to be too worried about missing FP1 session. But no, instead, we're going to take the rookie's F car instead, who he's not raced here since F3 Asia back in 2019. So, bitter times past. And just doesn't add to the whole narrative. And amusingly, Hirakawa did finish better than Gasly in FP1. But on top of all of that, Paula Pinto's been testing for Alpine at Monza this weekend. And it just all reminds me of the situation when Briatore was back at Benetton and not giving Jenson Button a chance. And he retained Trulli despite Button performing much better than him and replacing Button with Alonso. It just happened that both of those drivers were drivers that he, Briatore, managed and was quite keen on despite the evidence presented to him. And it just makes you go, and then a bit more,
Yeah, I mean, it's a pants car, and it's laughable management, really. Doohan binning it was foreseeable, especially considering their sim and wind tunnel are so out of whack that he could think he could do turn one without that DRS. I feel no sympathy for them as a team, but some certainly for Jack and Pierre, especially for Jack, who I feel, or who I feel, felt pressured himself into the driving this weekend after his big shunt in FP2. He was knackered when he got out of that car, Ocon helping him sort of actually clamber from the car. Oddly enough, very few of his team actually sort of giving him a hand. He was also seen sort of still holding his hand strangely at points, suggesting some aches and pains post shunt. I don't think the team are actively pressuring him to drive, but a general miasma of mismanagement hangs
Of
over
course,
that.
the Priatore would probably prefer he didn't drive. That's the whole point.
Yeah. But I think a general miasma of mismanagement hangs over the team and brings with it a pressure that I'm worried about being put on Jack that could lead to more risk-taking behaviour than strictly necessary. Obviously, driving an F1 race, quite risky as it is, but there is a threshold that I think is manageable. And I hope someone sits down with him and offers him an olive branch for just a chance to actually properly recover and continue. Or at least a good bit of physio will hopefully get him set for Bahrain. It could just be a bit of aches from quite a high-speed shunt. Hopefully it's nothing too serious that is actually impacted by him being pressured into the car each weekend. It's just, again, like you said, it's important to note that Colapinto is out on Sunday testing a previous car at Monza. This could just be TPC or hopefully recalibrating the sim and the wind tunnel, or they're getting him race fit. Jury is still out.
I don't want to give them any more airtime.
That's fair.
That's enough on Alpine. We've got 3 minutes left or so before we hit the hour mark. Let's quickly whiz through winners and spinners then. Ellie Mae, we'll start with your winner, please.
Holly Behrman.
Nice, easy, good choice. No arguments from me. Timo, yours.
Mercedes, P2 of the constructors, just reminding their own business.
Excellent for me, Max Verstappen. It was an imperious performance, and if we're calling races one on Saturday, that's where he did his best work. Meanwhile, spinners, other side of the coin, Ellie May.
Ferrari, do something.
Yeah, poke them with a stick, do something. Timo, yours.
McLaren, also do something, but something different from what you're already doing so that you can try and win against Max Verstappen in an inferior car.
Yeah.
You're not going to win a championship by being nice, Norris. What are you on about?
I feel like we could drastically change McLaren's hopes for this season by simply walking into Woking, finding a whiteboard and writing on it, split strategies, and that'd be it. Or undercut. Apparently that was a big word that was used a lot this weekend. So great branding from us.
I was about to say, it's a great advertising for the podcast.
Yeah. Meanwhile, my spinner, hard to say, really a lot of meh performances this weekend. Stroll was apocalyptically slow, only driver to get lapped. Just sort of driving in his own little world, I suppose. Sorry, Stroll. We figured you'd probably listen to this. Predictions review. 1 point to Timo for Max Verstappen's pole position. That's it. Meanwhile, over in Fantasy Formula One, for the Japanese Grand Prix, well, hang on, you're pointing at me.
Yeah, because I've got a gripe with you for this, the Fantasy F1. I told you after the whole Lawson Tsunoda debacle in the group chat to rehire Lawson. You did not in my Fantasy F1 team.
Oh, did I forget?
He did not score any points this weekend because he's inactive. Not that he would have done me much good anyway.
25.
But possibly, yes.
Something like that. Minus points, isn't
it? They take points away from you this year if you have an inactive driver. So I took a screenshot. Like, I must remind him of this because, yes, he's in the team, but he's still in Red Bull, which he isn't. So obviously I'm doing badly as it is. I don't need your help.
Oh, no. What would Liam Lawson have scored had he been there anyway?
Oh, not much, but I need all the help I can get in that team. So
let me just go and do your team now before I forget to do it at a later point in time. Sack Lawson and rehire Lawson, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Fine. There we go.
As awkward as that sounds, yeah.
Continue. Confirm changes. There we go. Completed. Does anyone have Lawson on their teams? No.
Technically, yes, but no.
I changed for Lawson, didn't I?
Ah, yeah, you did, and he earned you minus 4 points. So technically, Timo, I've only lost you 21 points there. So
I feel so much better.
It's not as bad as you think it is. Anyway, right, review for the Fantasy Formula One round of Japan. It's an Ellie May 1-2 as she utilises the triple DRS on all three teams, but only sees success with two, the dog dads proving to be a bit of a letdown. The cat dads and...
Where did you choose Japan for that?
I don't know, but I'm really glad I did, and I'm really glad I chose Max Verstappen for the triple in the cat dads.
I take credit for this. I've had an opposite point. What does he know? What does he know? I'm just going to do this on a fantasy team.
Cat dad and can't grow a moustache top the table, 192 and 190 each, with Levi Imboden's Le Victory in third or 161. On the curbs came home P5, 156, while my highest scoring team was Mixing Pot in P34 with 109. Overall, Leonie Wolf's Lando leads 579 points. Can't grow a moustache capitalises on a good weekend, takes second, relegating Jalagish to third, 575 points and 571 points each. Cat Dads are now in sixth, 431 points. Hopeful Heroes down to 14th on 386. And On the Curbs takes 32nd on 289.
Never been so high up in that fantasy league. And the funny thing is, I was like, this year, because every year I try really hard,
you only sound so emotional about that.
Every year I try so hard, but I achieve nothing.
And the Oscar goes to.
Literally, I will be last. Now I'm like, this year, don't care. Just gonna have a cat dags, a dog dads, can't grow a mustache, a Red Bull rejects. Don't care.
You've got places, really. You do well in fantasy this year. I do badly. And in predictions, it's come the opposite way as well.
Actually, no, in predictions, you're both tied.
No. Yeah.
See, that's success for me.
No.
Yeah, you're both on 2 points each. I'm still on nil, bear in mind. But yeah.
Because no. that's the first time that my lead...
Your dominance has been threatened.
Yes.
What? Yeah.
Oh, no.
See, McLaren, if I can do it, you can do it too. Come on.
I need to be more serious.
Yeah, going into Bahrain Wednesday night. Get thinking. It comes soon. Anyway, as you might have guessed, that's all we've got time for on this week's episode of the Undercut Podcast. We'll be back soon for a preview of the Bahrain Grand Prix, where Ellie May is going to be flexing her predictive muscles with might. In the meantime, though, Timo, where can listeners find you?
You can find me over on Instagram at the moment at t.albert.data on the curves, where I've got an interview out with Judith Casimiro Fernandez about her work as a comms director at Circuit de Barcelona de Catalunya. She had a busy weekend, as you can imagine, with the 4 hours of Barcelona that we just had. Excellent race. And you can find me over on Everything F1, where I've got a IndyCar Long Beach preview out courtesy of, well, not courtesy of, but with the help of Mr. Kyle Kirkwood and Ready Global Driver.
Oh, you've got Kyle Kirkwood on.
Well, I had a little word with him, yes.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Ellie May, where can the people find you?
I will be sitting under the moon, getting its
I'm wisdom. Scared already.
With, I don't know, some moon water and grounding myself with the earth. And making sure I get however, how many points a week can we get?
In the predictions,
five,
three for the podium and a wild one, so five.
And fastest lap.
Fastest lap as well.
Oh, six. Yeah, six.
To get all six of my predictions correct.
So if you want Ellie May, she'll be harvesting the power of her Wicca form bears in the
harvesting the power of the moon.
In the meantime, if you want more from me, pick up the latest issue of Classic Car Weekly. Give that a read. I drive the Mini Cooper that Tom Christensen is going to be racing at this weekend's Goodwood members meeting. There is also other stuff in it. We'll also have the Classic Car Weekly podcast, which will be out as well on Wednesday. And I'm off to go and start doing my media law module for my apprenticeship. So I've got a giant textbook about law to go and read. So that's going to be a good bit of fun.
About that.
Oh yeah, that would be, if you've still got notes floating around, that would be much appreciated. Otherwise,
this is a great opportunity to mess with him, Ellie May. Use it.
Please don't. I'm doing so well on my apprenticeship. Otherwise, that's all we've got time for on this part of this week's podcast. We'll be back later this week with a second podcast because it's a triple header. So we're back for Bahrain on Wednesday. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back very soon.